one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, big episode of the podcast here on this roundtable. We're going to do a full first half Phillies recap. The Phillies wrapped up the unofficial first half of the season with a really nice series win this weekend in Detroit, especially on Sunday, a game Don Mattingly called the game of the year for the Phillies, taking down Tarek Skubal as Zach Wheeler pitched a gem. Phillies winning on Sunday to win the series and end the first half on a really strong note. So we'll take a look back at the first half. We'll hand out just a few grades for performance in the first half by the Phillies. And then we're going to take a look ahead to this week. And of course, the All-Star game, the Home Run Derby in Philadelphia. The festivities are already underway, so we are going to set that all up for you as the Phillies will be featured prominently this week in the All-Star game, all the All-Star festivities at Citizens Bank Park. On the round table, I've got Justin Clue and I've got Liz Rocher. Justin Clue, of course, is a writer for Baseball Prospectus and is the author of the new book, Summer of the Cheap Wieners. You can hear him on the Hitting Season Patreon with Absolutely Hammered and The Dirty Inning. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, big week, buddy. How you feeling?
Very big week. I will say this. I'm getting over an illness, so that's why I sound like this. And B, I was at the All-Star Village today, and I will tell you, very fun, very cool time. Pretty big lack of representation for Brandon Marsh. Pretty disappointed in the Brandon Marsh representation at the All-Star Village. They have big, you know, banners of various All-Stars you can take your picture next to. And, you know, it's great to see All-Stars like J.J. Weatherholt and Mickey Moniak.
Oh, yeah.
Who are going to be so popular in Philadelphia, for sure.
Yeah. But I pointed at that in the All-Star Village and was like, what? Why is this here?
Kind of a separate issue, I feel like.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry, I had to point that out. It was the thing that I took with me, leaving the venue.
Yeah. But not a Brandon Marsh to be seen in this same photographic garden that you can get these pictures taken. So pretty disappointed. Found one piece of memorabilia that had, it was an autographed Brandon Marsh image that said Stay Loose and Sexy on it. Awesome. Mm.
Yeah.
Not paying for it based on the prices that were that you're going to have to pay as that part of the auction. But regardless, yeah, kind of disappointed how little Brandon Marsh was represented at the All-Star Fan Village. He is a starting member of the National League All-Star team. Pretty disappointing. But hey, other than that, very cool time.
Big miss. That's a big miss by whoever was in charge of that. And in Philadelphia, too. That's a big whiff for whoever was in charge of that. Somebody's got to lose their jobs over this. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm calling for pink slips now after that nonsense, especially for poor Justin. Poor Justin, who is his guy. Like, this is the height of Brandon Marsh right now. And to be not represented like that is criminal. It's not okay.
I'll send you guys the picture, but I got a picture next to the Bryce Harper banner doing a face that said, yeah, I guess. And that's essentially, mm-hmm. I feel like I nailed it because, you know, I had no other choice. Kind of ridiculous. I totally agree.
Yeah. It's kind of your resting face, though, isn't it, though, Justin? You know, like, just that's, you know.
That is the gentlest way my resting face has been described. Yes.
Okay.
Take
fair enough.
Fly balls to the face without even trying today.
Yeah, that's right.
What was that? Justin, you usually look like you don't give a crap. Tell us more.
Again, the gentlest way.
The gentlest way. Indeed. That is also Liz Rocher, of course, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I can certainly tell you who, at least not by name, but I can tell you that MLB is entirely responsible for the All-Star Village. They are responsible for all that stuff because it's all MLB branding. The Phillies do not have a lot to do, I'm going to guess, with the All-Star Village. They're probably given spots. There were spots for sponsors. I saw a Philadelphia artist, Duane, there painting a beautiful baseball equipment, gloves and balls and a bat, doing it live. That was as part of a like a deal with like an insurance company. So she was there, and I'm sure the Phillies had something to do with that, or her association with the Phillies got her there. So they might have had some say. There was like a big Fairmount section, which was interesting. But it was just a big sign, really.
It's a very City of Neighborhoods theme. They have sections for Fairmount and Fishtown and a couple other like three other neighborhoods, I think. So, again, very cool. Okay. Very nice to lay it out that way. But, yeah, Liz is right. It's an MLB branding decision to put a Bryce Harper banner up, but not a Brandon Marsh one. And, you know, some people were sorely disappointed.
Some unnamed people were sorely disappointed
some
by that.
Some middle-aged fans wanted to take a picture next to the, you know, player who they have latched on to, and we're not able to do that.
The cardboard cutout of that player, yes, right? I mean, the cardboard, because Mickey Moniak wasn't there. Yeah, got it.
Cannot stress enough that it was not a real person.
That should not go unsaid here on the beginning of the podcast. Well, look, it's going to be a lot of fun this week in Philadelphia. We're gonna really sit down and preview this All-Star game, this All-Star week, the Home Run Derby coming up in just a few minutes. But before we look ahead, let's just take a quick look back here at the first half of the Phillies season. The Phillies enter the All-Star break at 55-41, 11 games over 500. They were 55-41 last year. They are 54-43 at the break this year. So as good as a season as the Phillies had last year, and as terribly as they started this season, the Phillies are a game and a half off of last year's pace coming into the All-Star break. They have they were 8-18 to start the season. Of course, we all remember that. And they have gone 46-25 since then, 11 games over 500 heading into the All-Star break, and they ended a long road trip going 5-4 heading into the All-Star break. They were on June 1st, 9.5 games out of first place. They enter the All-Star break just 2 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. Unbelievably, the division is not over. It is still wide open. The Phillies have the momentum right now. Frankly, I thought the Marlins might overtake them, but the Marlins lost 2 in a row Saturday and Sunday, and so they're now 4 back of the Braves, 2 back of the Phillies in the National League East. But, you know, it's before we get into grades for the different parts of this team, Justin, give me your general thoughts on the first half of the season. It has been a wild ride to get here so far.
Yeah, the Phillies are I characterize them to begin the season as a constant comparison to the Mets, as a team that will be constantly, like, they will be parallel to each other, and one of them decided to blow it up and send Pete Alonso and Brandon Nimmo and Jeff McNeil and some mainstays of their team to other teams, or just give up on that core and move forward with a bunch of new guys. And the Phillies decided very famously to run it back. To an extent, you could say they maybe considered not running it back at one point in the winter, but we're so far past that, it's not even worth mentioning, even by me, the guy who keeps mentioning it. so we entered the season with that kind of parallel in play. And then both of the teams did exactly the same thing, which was be terrible for a pretty much month-long chunk of the season, to the point that people were pretty sure how things were going to go for both of them. Well, that's where the divergence actually happened. And now you're looking at a team that is playing the way that they were expected to play, with the flaws that I feel like you could say they were expected to have. Maybe some flaws, maybe one flaw that they weren't expected necessarily to have. But the Mets have not fared the same way. And, you know, that's been very satisfying to watch. But the Phillies are now on their own journey. And I think that comparison to the Mets and that parallel narrative that I was very positive was going to happen, not really a thing. Mets are kind of a non-factor so far in the Major League Baseball season. I think this very day they either blew a lead, or the Red Sox, like, you know, it was a tragic end to the Mets' first half. So that narrative, I think, is off the books. The Phillies are now on their own journey, and I had considered them completely out of it as far as the NL East goes. Still a playoff team, but totally out of it. Turns out they're not even out of that, which I got to tell you, I'm pretty staggered and very pleased to be wrong about that, because I consider them, not a factor in the NL East moving forward, especially with how hot the Braves were. But the Braves struggled in the month of June. They had a rough time you know, just same as the Mets and Phillies. You could make that comp the way they started the season. The Braves kind of had that month in June. So
yeah,
the Phillies are in a good spot. Honestly, the Phillies are in a good spot as a team that seems like they're going to make the playoffs, and or the team that is contending to make the playoffs. Very clear flaws, very clear shopping list and a list of needs at the trade deadline. Yeah. I don't think you're going to hit a home run on even if you attempt to meet every one of those needs at the trade deadline. I think it's the odds are against you that you're going to get everybody you need to address every issue you have. But the conclusion I've kind of reached about the Phillies, and this kind of goes for every Major League Baseball team and every season, is that you're not going to get the perfect player for every position. Even if you're the team that's going to go and go on to win the World Series, you're not going to do it with a perfect team. The Phillies are very much need to address what's wrong with them, but they can win the World Series as an imperfect team. They can make the playoffs as an imperfect team. And I think that's what you've seen them do in this first half of the season, is pull themselves out of that hole with their strengths and then, you know, have the success that they've had despite having like what is now a pretty demoralizing bullpen, a rotation that, you know, there's some guys you feel like you can completely rely on and other guys you're just never sure what you're going to get. And then one spot that you got to just have nothing but question marks about. And the offense being the same offense it's typically been, which is some nights looks like it's exactly, they're going to be able to give you exactly what you need to get through whatever start the pitcher gives you. And other nights where it looks like, boy, this team couldn't beat a AAA team if they were up here right now. So, you know, it's not totally unlike other Phillies teams of the past few years that have reached this point in the season. But it is also in a different way, very much its own animal, the 2026 Phillies. So I'm very eager to see what this team does to address its issues, because they have not had the best luck in that act in the past couple of years, which is such a key act for teams that are supposed to be, you know, good and make the playoffs. It's like, what do you do at the trade deadline? What are your pickups that wind up playing key roles? And Derek Hill has probably been the most successful guy you pick up and does great stuff for you randomly. Like, I'm reminded so much of that, just, you know, the Cal Stevenson game and everything with Derek Hill, except he's been so effective since he's gotten here. What, he was hitting like .356 with the Phillies at one point a couple of days ago. I'm sure that's changed a little bit since then, but that's a huge number to put up there. And, you know, I'll just close this.
And the defense.
And the defense, yes. But I'll just close this rant by saying that he put it out there when he got here that, like, yeah, wow, what a great coaching staff. And if a guy like Derek Hill, who's played for, like, what, 8 different teams at this point, comes in and starts playing really well and says, oh, your coaching staff was kind of the difference here. It's just something to keep in mind. The next time the Phillies go 0-20 with runners in scoring position and you're calling for Kevin Long's head, just keep in mind, he's not the first guy to come here and say, like, oh, boy, this was really effective and good for me and then good for the Phillies as well. So they're going to need more successes like that moving forward. They haven't had the best luck with that in the past couple of years, but perhaps they can get lucky this time, or you know, perhaps their Hall of Fame president of baseball operations can find the guys they need to fix some of these flaws going into the second half.
I have a lot of thoughts on this first half myself, but Liz, let me get your thoughts on just your general feelings as we are through one half of baseball here.
Well, I can't disagree with anything Justin said. So my thoughts are, the season thus far has given us so much of what we want in a baseball team, which is pure entertainment from game to game. There was that whole bad period, which in and of itself was like a sitcom. The whole thing felt bizarre. They could not play better than they were playing. It didn't matter what they did. And then they changed their manager and everything changed. You know, and it's very much like Rob Thompson a few years ago. We've said that. But it also feels different. You know, it does genuinely feel like it could be the plot of like a one season sitcom. I still maintain that this could be very entertaining, but it's given us everything we've want. There's been bad play. There's been great play. There have been big surprises. There's been teaching and learning. You know, there are all sorts of things that you can point to as to why this first half was bad and good. And I think if you're looking to be entertained all season long, you might want the bad and good to be a little bit more sprinkled in, sort of like a, I don't know, a salad, as opposed to different things that you're eating at different times. But it's there isn't mm-hmm. much more I could have asked for. You know, as far as an arc, a story arc, they've given me everything that I want. They're, you know, I'm just looking at it from a pure entertainment perspective. Because as a human being, some nights I want to watch the Phillies and some nights I would rather do anything else, no matter how they're playing. And so I need entertainment from my team. And they've definitely given us that.
This season has been largely defined by a lot of teams just kind of hovering around 500. I don't know if the last time you checked in with the American League, but it's pretty bad this year.
Oh, it's really bad.
You could have a lot worse arc than a team that started 9-19 and then found a way to win to the point that they were two games out of the division lead by the All-Star break. Like, that's at this year in 2026 in Major League Baseball, that is a very positive arc to be on. The Phillies are one of not a lot of teams that are on a good trajectory at the moment.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you guys have said. This has been an entertaining season. It's certainly been a memorable season. There have been a couple of really memorable games. Those comeback wins in Washington, you know, down in the ninth inning, down to their final out, down to their final strike. They come back. They had that 14-9 win where they were down 8-5 in the ninth inning and sent 10 batters to the plate. You know, you had the home run by Marsh and the 3-run homer by Stott, and that was a big Derek Hill game. The game after Derek Hill hits the home run, the 2-run pinch hit home run to hit a home run and another comeback win. There's just been a lot of those kinds of moments this year where the Phillies were like a little bit of a cardiac kid kind of a situation. So they've shown a lot of I think a lot of heart this year. And I'm going to start off with some of the good stuff. I think they've shown a lot of heart. They got down early. I think this season started off as a grind for them. And I don't think that was necessarily Rob Thompson's fault, but it's like we had said, it's like I had been saying throughout the offseason that it seemed insane to me to bring all of the same elements back to give it another try here. And so they didn't remake the roster and they held on to the manager, but you could just tell there was something missing. They couldn't seem to get the train on the tracks. And the players themselves, Brandon Marsh has said in interviews that it really did take Don Mattingly coming in here and saying, listen, if we're going to lose, if we're going to have a losing record this year, then let's do it with our hair on fire, right? Let's do it in a way where we're playing our game. And if we lose, we lose. But let's not go out there and be this passive team that's allowing the games to come to us and instead of us going out and taking the games. And the Phillies really played with a different mindset from that point on. So I think the Don Mattingly addition has been a benefit, not even necessarily because Mattingly's a better manager, but just because he was different, just because it was a different voice. And that's what this team kind of needed. What we've seen from this team in the first half is that they are very, very top heavy. They have six or seven superstar players that have generally carried this team so far this year. The six All-Stars and Zach Wheeler have really carried this team here in 2026. Bryson Stott has had his moments. Alec Bohm, after a brutal start, has played very well at third base over the last few months. But we've also seen guys just things not work out. Adolis Garcia obviously got hurt. Now Derek Hill comes in and is a net positive, and I don't know how long that's going to go on for, but that's been a welcome change. You know, Justin Crawford was good early, really struggled, has been pretty good as of late. And so you see that some of that's good. They've had some things really not go their way. Andrew Painter has been a huge disappointment this year. They're really hurting in the number five spot in the rotation. And Aaron Nola has pitched a little better at times this year, but he's incredibly unstable. So you don't know what you're getting with your number four starter. And then in the bullpen was supposed to be a strength, especially left-handed relief was supposed to be a strength. It's been a big problem for this team. So like you said, Justin, there are going to be problems that Dave Dombrowski needs to address. I think the fact the Phillies are 11 games over 500 with me generally, I think I have a general feeling of like, man, this just does not a lot not right with this team. I feel like I've been pessimistic about the Phillies more than I've been optimistic about them here so far in 2026. And I'm sure that's not fair to them because they are 11 games over 500. This series in Detroit, the Tigers were a red hot team coming into this series. The Phillies on Sunday went up against Tarek Skubal. Zach Wheeler versus Tarek Skubal, maybe the pitching matchup of the year, and the Phillies came out on top. They really battled Skubal in that game. Skubal was frustrated. He was out of that game by the sixth inning until Real Muto had the bases clearing double after they finally were able to get Skubal out and get to the bullpen. I mean, a tremendous win by the Phillies heading into the break when I think in years past they've kind of struggled, stumbled going into the All-Star break. And it was a long series of, they played four home games in the last 3 weeks leading up to the start of this long road series were those Nationals games in Washington that I just mentioned a moment ago. They went to Washington. They went to New York. They had four games against Pittsburgh at home. And then they did this three-city trip now going into the All-Star break. It's tough to put a winning streak together when you're on the road that much. So I just, again, with this team, my summary of the first half is like, we're all just kind of still waiting for October, because last year the team was rolling into October, couldn't have been playing better, and it fell apart. Like, the regular season doesn't have any effect on what's going to happen in the playoffs. So I think you're right. They've positioned themselves well. They are going to try to improve themselves at the trade deadline. I don't know that they have the ammunition to actually improve themselves in a truly meaningful way to add a really big piece. But they're going to add some things. They are going to go do some things and try and fill in some of the holes on a roster that is very top heavy, but has some real needs to it. And the needs have come up to really bite them in a lot of different ways so far in the first half. But on the whole, they've been one of the best teams in the National League. And I don't really know how they've gotten here. They have a negative run differential. I don't know how they've done it. You know, they should not be 11 games over 500 with a negative run differential. And yet, here we are, two games back of the Atlanta Braves as we enter the All-Star break, which is, I guess, you know, it's kind of where you'd want them to be.
I think the shorthand is you don't have to wonder what the Phillies are going to give you at this point. You do have to wonder if it's going to be enough. And that's before they do whatever they're going to do at the trade deadline, which is not going to be nothing. So that's why I have a more positive outlook at this point. Winning this series in Detroit, you know, I know we like to talk about, you know, the difference between losing a game and winning a game is the difference between losing or winning a series. And that's the difference between deciding if a team's got momentum or vibes or whatever. But winning this series was important. I think there's a lot of people who have that Oakland A's series on their minds from 2 years ago. That was just the beginning of a slow death. And losing some games to Kansas City and then losing that one game in Cincinnati was enough for some people to be like, it's happening. It's happening again. And it's completely understandable. You know, everybody's scarred by this team because of the disappointments that have happened the last couple of years. Just in this era alone, this team has scarred you for sure. But I do think that they've used their strengths to pull away from their flaw. And like I was kind of saying, taking half an hour to say at the beginning of the show, this team may not be able to say that their strengths, well, you can say that their strengths outweigh their flaws, or they wouldn't be in the position they're in right now.
Right.
But they were able to use their strengths to pull out of a hole created by their flaws and also some bad luck early on. Will this team lose some games because of Trey Turner's defense, because of, you know, the lack of bullpen depth, lack of overall depth? Yeah, probably moving forward, you know, yeah, absolutely. But again, that depends on what happens next, you know, after the All-Star break and everything. They've got quite a gauntlet after the All-Star break. They got the Dodgers and the Yankees and they got some strong opponents to face after the All-Star game. But at the same time, I feel like they put themselves in a good spot despite their early struggles. And there was a lot of great stuff to come out of this. Kyle Schwarber hitting as many home runs as he's hit so far.
Oh, yeah.
It's like absolutely absurd. Christopher Sanchez's scoreless inning streak is like, you know, already kind of been absorbed by history, but pretty definitive of this team's success early on, that they're able to rely on not just like a strength, but an elite level of strength to carry them through rough periods. Like, not every team has that guy. And like, that's the difference. The Phillies have more than one starting pitcher who can do that for you. And one of them is pretty upset right now, and is going to pitch that way in the second half. Hopefully,
we're gonna talk about. Go ahead, Liz. Yeah, we're gonna talk about him in a second. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh well, then I'll wait till then.
On the Zach Wheeler front, let's hold up on the Zach Wheeler front for just a minute, because I do want to I do want to just kind of give some quick grades for the units as a whole. We don't have enough time to go grade all the different players, but let's give out some grades for the offense. We'll start off with the offense here, and I'll start off, and I feel like the offense was absolutely awful early, and I don't know if some of that was the weather that you saw like in late March and April as the weather's heated up. It seems like the team has gotten better. Alec Bohm has heated up. Bryson Stott has heated up. They're not playing like superstars or any stretch of the imagination, but they're playing good, competent baseball. They're getting big hits in big situations. And the team as a whole over the last, since June 1st, leads Major League Baseball in batting average with runners in scoring position. So one of the things they've really done is they've hit when it matters most. And that's been a big improvement. I still don't believe in the offense in October, and I don't know what they can do at the trade deadline to make me believe in it more than I do. And there's nothing else to say about that. They just kind of have to do it in October. But I think what we've seen from this offense is what we should expect from them and what we've always seen from them. They get really hot and really productive, and they will carry the team for a stretch, and they will get cold and they will frustrate you, and they still can't hit left-handed starting pitching. And that's going to be a major problem for them in the playoffs when they start facing good left-handed starting pitching. That being said, I think I would give the offense at this point a B. I'd give them a solid B. I think, generally speaking, they've been an above average offense in Major League Baseball, especially since May, since they started playing a lot better. And so, yeah, I'll flush April. I will. I'll flush it. You know, rough first month. Guys were getting their sea legs under them. Like, again, the whole vibe around the team was just off. It was just not right. And they've, generally speaking, been a productive offense much more often than not, really, since the start of early May. So, Liz, give me a grade on the offense for me.
I think a B is an appropriate grade, but I'll differ and say B minus, because their cold streaks have been annoying, and there have been a handful of games where they didn't score. They really could have. There's been a couple of spots where they got good starts and couldn't get the bats around. And that's the type of stuff that worries me, because you want to take advantage of those. You know, you don't know how the offense is going to come out on a day-to-day basis, but it's the consistency that you want. And I think we've been seeing more consistency lately. That's been one of the most positive developments of all of this. So they just need to keep it up. So I'll say, I think I've talked myself into a B plus. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, wow. You went from B minus to B. So you went below me, and then you jumped above me.
And then I talked myself into that. And now I'm thinking, have I swung too far? Should I just agree with John and go B?
It's always best to agree with me.
It doesn't actually matter of the tiny degrees. So I'll just stick with B. Moving on.
All right. Justin.
I'm going to agree with you and say a B. I feel like there were a couple of, probably like a dozen to up to 20 individual at-bats that would make me give them a B- to C+, even, because of how furious I was throughout the... But this is also this is who this team is. And I was talking to an Orioles fan friend of mine earlier today, and he was talking about how the Orioles finally managed to win 4 games in a row. That's been their demon so far this year, that they cannot win 4 in a row. They finally won 4 in a row. It cost them their only hitter, who was hitting over 300, because he got hit in the hand with a pitch. But they did manage to win the game. And I said, you know, I'm just starting to think the Orioles are just not the team of destiny this year. And he said, I'm not giving up on them yet. They just need consistency. And I thought, boy, you kind of just described every single Major League Baseball team that thinks they might have a shot. They all need consistency. They all want consistency. They all want all the players they have to be playing at their ceilings all the time. And you know what never happens? The situation that I just described. That is not a thing. That's just not a thing. No lineup is ever firing on all cylinders for, like, I'm going to say even 3 weeks in a row. Like, you might have a hot couple of weeks, but that's it. That's all you get, because that's baseball. So when you say the Phillies need consistency, I agree with you. They're not going to get it, because no team does, and this team in particular doesn't. So I think the output that you've gotten from the offense, I'm giving them the B because you're getting the Schwarber that you wanted to get, that you thought maybe you wouldn't get because how is he going to be that good again? Well, he is. You're getting the Harper that you were thinking, oh boy, you know, we're doing this whole elite thing.
You got the elite Harper.
He's on the outs. It's like him and Dabrowski are like, you know, we're doing public barbs here. Like, yeah, what are we doing? Not really an issue. Came out firing. As we said in earlier months ago episodes, you wanted to prove you were elite. You've done that. There have been periods this year so far that Bryce Harper's looked absolutely elite. And like you said, Boehm and Stott have both figured things out at different points. Neither one of those guys' job is to be the best hitter in the lineup. Neither of them. So if they can just be successful at a higher rate, that's like all people are willing to like just you know, consistency, like I just said, is almost impossible. But if you can just at a little slightly higher rate of success, and they were able to do that for enough times. Bring in a guy like Derek Hill and watch him, you know, get a couple of clutch hits for you now and again. Yeah, that's exactly what you're looking for. Adolis Garcia didn't really work out. Trey Turner, you know, he kind of looked like he was maybe turning a corner, you know, last week. Who knows what you're going to get there. But obviously the name I haven't mentioned yet is Brandon Marsh. This might be, you know, and I know I'm the Brandon Marsh guy, but at the same time, kind of the key change here. You're talking about things changing, rocks flipping over. That's the change and the consistency that you have not gotten from any other hitters in this lineup. Is he going to hit lefties forever? I mean, come on. He's not even really hitting them extremely well now, but he is hitting them better than he was before. And, you know, you don't need to know that he's going to hit them forever. If this is just like the best season of Brandon Marsh's career, it's still what you want. It's still what you wanted to see from him. So I'm giving the offense a B because you've seen enough change and reliability from the guys that you wanted to see that from to win enough games where the pitching wasn't there. So yeah, I'm with you, John. I'm giving them a B.
It's fun to see players have career seasons like this. And you hope they sustain it, but they don't sometimes, but that's okay. Like so many fun players have had pop-up career seasons like this, but Marsh has been a productive player with the team for a while. So yeah, I agree. I think we're all in agreement on the offense. Let's move over to the starting rotation. And it's been a very top-heavy rotation, Justin, this year. I think it's going to be a difficult group to grade, but give it a shot.
Yeah, I agree. It becomes a little more difficult given that the Phillies put so much weight on Andrew Painter to carry that fifth spot. And, you know, I didn't mention Justin Crawford's name while talking about the offense because I'm giving him a rookie's leeway. And I don't think he's done poorly enough to be like, oh my God, you got to get him out of there. Oh my God, he's just an anchor at the bottom of the lineup. He's at the bottom of the lineup for a reason. And he's been able to do... enough of what his makeup allows him to do to be a rookie center fielder. You know, like it is kind of funny to be seeing Mickey Moniak in the All-Star game.
Oh my gosh, it is weird.
I think we have a new answer for, you know, what prospect came back to bite the Phillies. I'm not saying Moniak really is doing that, but now you get to point to, oh well, he was an All-Star, so like that kind of rakes him the top of the. And obviously being a center fielder, that's, you know, going to be something people remember who follow the Phillies. But Crawford has been perfectly serviceable. I think his struggles, you know, as a rookie, you chalk up his struggles to, well, he's learning his position, which is a very important, you know, one of the top three difficult positions on a major league, on any baseball diamond as a major leaguer. So I've been giving him some plenty of leeway. And I think, you know, he's starting to look a little better. Painter, I think you got to think in the same way, but he's just playing so much more of a pivotal role. Like, yeah, he's not in the lineup every day, but there's a lot of weight on that rotation, on this team, the way this team is made up. That rotation is supposed to be a big strength. And Painter, being as highly touted as he was, and obviously knowing his injury history and health history and everything, but he was very highly touted, and the Phillies wanted to, like, they were like, look, this would be the perfect time for a rookie pitcher to come in here, fill that number five spot, you know, have all the pressure off him that being the number five instead of like the number three is going to do, and let him just adapt. And tragically, he hasn't, and he didn't. And we'll see what happens there. But even that, I think, is important context to remember when you're grading this rotation. So obviously, Wheeler coming back from what he came back from and just amazing. Looking the way he looks is just unbelievable. Like, that's holy man, like that is just, that is unbelievable. And yeah, like I said, his outlook on the second half is comically awesome. I can't wait to see.
He wants to shove it up everyone's rear end the entire second half. I mean, I'm scared for everybody because he is so ticked off, and he's taking it out on people on the mound. It's awesome.
Saw a great stat on the ESPN bottom line today. Moving on to Christopher Sanchez, who obviously has had a couple of starts that made you go, huh, but also is starting the All-Star game. And that is that Sanchez and Dylan Cease, the American League starter, are both the first starters of the All-Star game for their franchise since Roy Halladay, both of them.
No.
Which is just phenomenal. And Sanchez, like that's telling you something about Sanchez too. That the game's in Philly, and I'm sure that gave you a little bit of a push there, because obviously Mizorowski's done what he's done this year, and there's plenty of other very good pitchers in the National League. But Sanchez being rising up from the position he was with the Phillies and filling the role he's filling now, it's such a huge strength. Lizardo, you know, also a big fan of Lizardo. He's got a bit of chaos in him as well, where, like, you know, he might give up 5 runs and set a career high in strikeouts in a single game.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, telling in a couple of ways, I guess. But, you know, he's a guy that you can rely on to give you a start when you need him to. And Nola, you know, there's always something to throw out there about Nola to make you say, like, oh, I don't like Nola start, blah, blah. And then someone will say, well, you know that they're 8-4 in his last 12 starts. And you're like, okay.
Is that great. A real stat, though, that you just said? It is? Yeah. Oh, okay. I would not have thought that.
Would not have thought that either. And, you know, that is what it is. But at the same time, we all know what to expect from an Aaron Nola start, which is...
home runs.
Yeah, well, home runs for sure.
Home runs.
The other team and then, hitting home runs. Yes.
Yeah.
So... but, all of that creates, you know, feeds into this one letter grade, which I think I'll go as low as a B minus, because the Painter situation didn't work. Lizardo will, you know, he's great to watch, and I expect good things from him in the second half. I really do. You know, he's an all-star, but he's, you know, he's going to do what he's going to do. And there are certainly worse, you know, far worse. Number threes across baseball. If you're starting a series with Wheeler, Sanchez, and Lizardo, you got a pretty good shot of winning that series. So I'm giving the rotation a B minus because, boy, there's some true greatness in there, and then there's some complete chaos, and then there's just a total question mark. So I think that all adds up to a B minus.
I'll go a little higher. I'll give the starting rotation a B plus, and I'm going to highly weight the top half of the starting rotation because you had Christopher Sanchez in that consecutive scoreless inning streak this year, which was just captivating and truly exciting. And his dominance, to see him take even another step forward and to be named and we're going to talk about him being named the starting pitcher of the All-Star game. But the fact that he has developed to the point where he has is just incredible. But I mean, you look at it, Zach Wheeler has outpitched Christopher Sanchez. I mean, it really is unbelievable what Zach Wheeler is doing. And the fact that this was a life-threatening issue last year for Zach Wheeler. Like, this wasn't just like a pitching injury. Like, this was a life-threatening issue with Zach Wheeler a year ago. No one was sure when he would come back this year and what he would look like when he came back. He came back about a month earlier than even the most optimistic forecasts had expected him to, and shoved right away. Now, he didn't have the stuff he has right now early on. I think he was trying to soft pedal it just a little bit, which is totally understandable. But since he got mad, he has decided, okay, enough of that nonsense. I'm just going to shove. I'm going to shove it down people's throats. And it has been unbelievable to watch an angry Zach Wheeler. It's like watching Bob Gibson and Nolan Ryan and like Tom Seaver and those guys. Like, those guys pitched with anger on the mound a lot, you know, and it's very old school. He's 36 years old. I mean, my goodness, he's doing this at the age that he's doing it. Not getting picked to the All-Star team might be the best thing to happen for the Phillies here in the second half, if you get an angry Zach Wheeler pitching like this. And Jesus Lizardo has been awesome over the last 8 or 9 starts. Really just a tremendous, and he's been great on the road, not so great at home, great on the road, which is a weird split. Sanchez has been a little bit of the opposite, although the split isn't quite as egregious. But I'll take Lizardo in Game 3 of a playoff series right now. And I think he's got so much more upside that when he does get hot like this, he pitches like an ace, which is which is what you want from your number three starter. And then you've got Nola and you've got Painter, who have really dragged down the starting rotation this year. Nola not as much as Painter. Painter obviously a big disappointment. They've got to figure out something to do with that number five spot in the rotation, because even though Ron Hell has been okay, it's a scheduled loss most days, and you're really burning the bullpen pitching Nola and whoever the number five is back to back. Once the All-Star break is over, they got to figure out a way to reconfigure the back of the rotation so that the bullpen isn't getting burned quite to that degree. But because of how great Sanchez and Wheeler have been, and really Lizardo has been as of late, I'm going to weight that higher than I will what's been going on at the back of the rotation. So I will give them a B+ out of the starting rotation. I think on the whole, the starting rotation has been the strength of the team that we thought it would be. Liz, what is your grade for the starting rotation?
You said somewhat the same thing that I was going to say. I think a B feels most appropriate. You know, the good part is good. Man, the bad part is bad. But, you know, like a B, B minus. I think it's appropriate. The good stuff has been really good.
Let's move to the bullpen. Liz, I'm going to get your thoughts on the bullpen first here, because this was supposed to be a strength at the start of the year, too. They made some investments. They went out and got Brad Keller this offseason. You know, they traded for Jonathan Bolin. They had a couple of guys in spring training who flashed, and you thought, oh, this is interesting. This guy's interesting, but, you know, didn't turn out to be very, very good once the regular season hit. And I think, for me, this is probably the number one area they need to address at the trade deadline, is fixing up this bullpen. What's your grade right now for the relievers?
I'll give them a... I'm going to have to give him like a C-, I think, or like, I mean, I don't want to give him a D, but like recency bias is a thing. You remember the things that are most recent, and hoo boy, there have been some less than pleasant things that we've seen lately. Yeah, I don't know how much more I want to talk about the bullpen or people in the bullpen besides Johan Duran, because he's been a bright spot. Kirkering had a really good spell, and it seems like it's over almost as soon as it starts, or as soon as we start noticing it, a classic Phillies thing. As soon as we all start noticing something good is happening, the guy almost like hears a whisper on the wind from the Delaware Valley and it affects his brain while he's sleeping, and it's all over. So I think that's where I fall.
Bullpens are fickle creatures, man.
They are.
I struggle with the Phillies teams specifically when they come into a season saying our bullpen will be a strength, because you can't say that with confidence. I'm not saying I instantly doubt it, but this year, you know, there were some changes made, and the Brad Keller addition, I remember being very like, okay, well, this does something. This makes me feel better. But I also remember being pretty out on Keller pretty quick, not liking what I was seeing, and he did not prove to be the asset that he was brought in to be. You have kind of looked at this bullpen as like, you know, it's Johan Duran and then two more guys as like your top three, and those other two guys have kind of been very fluid throughout the season. And that works if some guys are going to be bad and other guys are going to come through. But that's not always been the case. Like, yep. You know, you're looking at a lights out all-star closer, and that's of extreme value for a Phillies team. We've seen that kind of closer on teams for the Phillies that, you know, that's just no reason for that guy to be here. But on this team, that's an immense amount of value. And that's the, you know, a huge, when you talk about consistency, plus for this bullpen. I'm not sure what else you could say has been a consistent plus for this bullpen all throughout the season. They have struggled with having a lefty they can rely on. They have struggled with getting outs with runners in scoring position. They've struggled with getting outs with no runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
They've struggled to, they've just struggled to come through when the team needed it most. And this is a team that, you know, we talk about going back to the rotation. Nola is kind of a guy that, he's just earned the reputation. It's like, we have a big start today and Nola's got the ball, and he can't do it. He can't fulfill the narrative destiny that just seems to be in place there. He comes up small in those moments. He is not a guy I would give the ball in a moment. I need, you need to rely on your pitcher. And unfortunately, the bullpen, there's too many guys like that at this point as well. So yeah. I think that has become an area where you definitely, this is where we spent most of the first half talking about a right-handed outfield bat. The bullpen has quickly and swiftly made itself the primary focus here, because now your top three is like Joan Duran, Jonathan Bolin, and then like Tim Mesa by default, just kind of filling in that third spot. And like, that's not enough bullpen pitching to get you through a playoff series or a second half where teams are going to be playing you more competitively. You're talking about the lefties the teams are going to throw at the Phillies in the second half. That's going to happen a lot more often as teams are trying to, like, you know, be more strategic or purposeful in their winning. So the Phillies need to, they need to really make some adjustments here. Because when you talk about a lack of depth on this team, you see stuff like, oh, Tanner Banks is going on the injured list, and they recalled Chase Shugart, who was demoted the other day for being terrible. Like, that's not depth. That's just a guy who's not getting the job done, replacing another guy with a guy who's not getting the job done.
Those are just dudes.
It's not depth. It's death. Right. So you didn't give me a grade, Justin. What's your grade? I like it.
I'm gonna give it a D. I'm gonna say C. I'm gonna say C minus. I am.
All right, a swim minus. I like it. C minus, and I'm gonna go also with a C minus. That's about what I was thinking. Alvarado has been interesting. His numbers are terrible. He finally got his ERA down under 7. All of the peripherals are really good for him. Like, really good for him. But he's given up a lot of hits, a lot of dink and dunk stuff. But also, he's been walking a lot of guys lately. His overall walk numbers for the season are still pretty good. He's having a weird season, and he's like, I used to throw really hard, and it used to really get it by people. But comparatively speaking, I don't throw as hard anymore, and players are used to velocity. So he's having to learn to he's learning that his velocity isn't enough at this point. And with Tanner Banks faltering, Tim Mesa had been pitching great, and then he had a meltdown on Friday in Detroit. So that was rough to watch. Kirkering, I mean, the number is still good. He's got an ERA under 3, but he'll walk the bases loaded just as soon as he'll, get a couple of guys out. So there's just, outside of Joan Duran, there's not a lot you can trust. That being said, Joan Duran is otherworldly. And if you can just find a way to get him the ball late in the game, you're going to win that game. I mean, there's going to be the random game where he gives up like 3 straight singles and you lose. But he is unbelievable right now on some kind of heater. And if you can get him leads in the playoffs, you're going to win a lot of playoff games. And so he brings it up to a C minus for me. I think it'd be worse if, obviously it'd be much worse if Joan Duran wasn't there. All right. I want to get to the All-Star game stuff, but really quickly, let me just hit a couple of bullets and get your answers on these real quick. Who was the team's MVP in the first half? Who's got an answer on that one?
Brandon Marsh.
Christopher Sanchez.
Oh, that's a good one. I was going to say Bryce Harper, but I think I actually like Christopher Sanchez better. So I'll go with Christopher Sanchez. I think you're right. Who's had the most surprisingly good first half? We all agreed it's Brandon Marsh. Surprisingly good first half. Is there any secondary?
I didn't know that was going to be a question. So
yeah, I know. I know, but don't save it now. If you think Marsh has been the MVP, like, he's been the biggest difference, I think, in the offense being more consistent. I don't have a problem with him being both of those different things. Yeah. Biggest disappointment.
Trey Painter? Turner.
Oh, Trey Turner's a good one. Yeah,
I'll say
Trey
Painter.
Turner's good. Yeah, I'll say Painter. I was going to say Painter, but now that Justin has said Trey Turner, yeah, I think I got to go with Trey Turner. I mean, he's your leadoff hitter, $300 million guy, and he's an ER. He's an OPS, I think, still under 700. Yeah, I think that's hard. It's hard to come up with anybody else other than Andrew Painter, which I agree is a pretty close second. But overall, a good first half for the Phillies. Again, 54-43 at the break, just 2 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. Let's get into the All-Star game. Obviously, this is a big week in Philadelphia. The Phillies are going to be featured prominently here in the Home Run Derby and in the All-Star game. We did find out on Sunday that Christopher Sanchez will get the start for the National League. He'll go up against Dylan Cease of the Toronto Blue Jays. And as Justin mentioned, it's the first time either team has had a starter start an All-Star game since Roy Halladay did it for both of those different teams in different seasons.
Oh, that's really cool, actually. Isn't that a cool thing? I love that little fact.
Yeah, it's a little nugget. So Sanchez is the seventh Phillies pitcher to start an All-Star game. We just said Roy Halladay is the other one of the other six. Who are the five remaining Phillies starters to start in an All-Star game? We're going to play a little quiz. Try and tick off some Philly starters. Which Philly starters started an All-Star game? There's five outside of Christopher Sanchez and Roy Halladay.
Steve Carlton.
Steve Carlton is one. He did it in 1979.
I don't think Cole Hamels did it.
He did not.
He did. No. Okay.
Jim Bunning.
Jim Bunning did not start an All-Star game. No.
Oh, no. That's so bad for him. Sorry. I hate that guy.
I'm going to take a swing here. John Denny.
John, good guess. Incorrect. He did not start in 1983, but that's a great guess.
I'm terrible with pitchers.
What if I can give you the year, if that'll help for some of these guys?
All right.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. 1999.
Curt Schilling.
Curt Schilling is correct. He had a career year for a brutal Phillies team there in 1999.
Robin Roberts.
Robin Roberts did it five times in the 1950s. 1950, 1951, 1953, 1954, and 1955. Robin Roberts started five All-Star games. There's two left.
You still got those years?
Let me take you back to the summer of 1993. Macho Rowe.
Mulholland.
Terry Mulholland is the answer to that one. That is correct. And then the other one is a contemporary of Robin Roberts. He also started in the All-Star game two seasons in the 1950s, 1952 and 1957.
It's too early for Chris Short.
It is.
Okay.
But the initials are the same. CS.
Kurt Simmons.
Kurt Simmons is correct. 1952 and 1957. So in the 1950s,
well,
in the 1950s, a Phillies starting pitcher started the All-Star game in 1950, 1951, 1952, 1953, 1954, 1955, and 1957. Seven out of the 10 years in the All-Star game, a Phillies starter, Robin Roberts or Kurt Simmons, started the All-Star game. That's wild.
Wow. And still over 20 years from their first World Series victory.
I was just going to say, those are some great pitching performances on some teams that might have been real bad.
Yeah, really, really bad. They were. Most of those teams were really bad in the 50s. So Christopher Sanchez will start in the game. Brandon Marsh will also start in the game. And then we will see Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Jesus Luzardo, and Joan Duran presumably all in this game as well. Now, we talked about Zach Wheeler pitching angry. He's an angry man right now.
We have
covered on this podcast the fact that he was not added to the team because he was going to pitch on Sunday, which he did today. And there's a rule that says pitchers cannot pitch in the All-Star game if they've pitched on a Sunday. Well, apparently the backlash got to Major League Baseball. The fan disgruntlement got back to the Major League Baseball offices. And when Chase Burns of the Cincinnati Reds had to withdraw from the All-Star game, who came calling to Zach Wheeler on Friday night asking him to join the team as a replacement? To which Zach Wheeler said, no, I'm not joining your All-Star team. He refused, saying he didn't want to be anyone's fifth choice. He was insulted by not being taken, not necessarily the first time around, but when he was refused the second time around because of the rule that said he wasn't allowed to pitch, he made plans. There are some people, I think, who are upset with this. Because they wanted to see Zach Wheeler pitching in Philadelphia in the All-Star game. But he refused. He's going to go to the beach with his family.
Heck yeah. Let the man rest.
Well, are you surprised, Liz, that he turned it down after kind of making, he made a big stink about it and talked about how the Hall of Fame voters look at All-Star selections, which he is 100% right about. Are you surprised he then turned it down when they came to him on Friday night? Clearly, Major League Baseball is like, yeah, we screwed up here.
No, I'm not surprised by it. He's definitely a guy that'll hold that type of grudge because he cares a lot about his career. He cares a lot about pitching well, and honors like that mean a lot to him. And that is, there's nothing wrong with that. That's completely understandable. He is angry because he knows how good he is. He knows how good he is, and he has a strong suspicion, and I think it's true, that he wasn't chosen because he missed a handful of starts at the beginning of the season. And so I think the question in his mind is, how freaking well do I have to do to get on the to be in the first round of All-Star picks? How well do I need to throw? Like, tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it.
Seriously.
That's it. Like, and they blew their chance. And honestly, I think the writers will remember him turning that down and being angry and continuing to pitch so well that no one can, that it will be, you know, I mean, when you have to wonder, it probably happens. I don't even know. How often does a pitcher win the Cy Young without having made the All-Star team?
It happens. It happens more often than you think. I feel like there's been some Phillies pitchers who that has happened to. But yeah, I think you're right.
Exactly.
I mean, just and
so I'm. No, go right ahead.
No, I was
I'm
just
pretty much
I was,
finished.
I was going to just mention before I got Justin's opinion on this. Saw this note that there have been 15 occurrences in Major League history of a pitcher having 10 or more wins, 10 or more strikeouts per nine, and an ERA under 2.15 entering the All-Star break. And Zach Wheeler is the only one not named to the All-Star team. He has the fourth best ERA in baseball for starters who have pitched a minimum of 80 innings so far. His ERA is 2.13, and he has the second best whip in baseball behind Jacob Mizorowski, the third best opponent's batting average, Justin. And he's not going to be on the All-Star team. Yeah, I mean, what do you think of Zach turning this down?
When's the last time a pitcher was, or a player was straight up offered an All-Star spot and said no? Not because they were hurt or tired or whatever. Like, maybe I'm wrong, but that seems surprising in and of itself. So I would say that it was surprising that he was like, no. Not because, you know, the context of them coming to him and having already named Lizardo and him having already made his feelings clear. I did feel like it was surprising that he was said, like, you know, on the one hand, you know, it would have felt like a consolation prize for them to come to him after he said something. And I think we would have been saying, oh man, wouldn't it have been cool if he had said no and just like turned him down. So the fact that he did is kind of like wish fulfillment, like fantasy fulfillment, because everyone knows he should be an All-Star and he gets to use that time to rest and come back real ticked off, which is of great value to everybody else. So, yeah, I would say between surprised or not surprised, I think it's more surprising, honestly, that that he won't be there. And, you know, his agent made that big stink and used a bunch of hyperbolic agent language and said, like, well, because he's boring, because he just does his job. I was talking about the impossibility of consistency in baseball. That's what his agent's talking about. Zach Wheeler has done the unthinkable and become consistently incomparable on the mound. And that does get boring, quote unquote, to people because you just start taking that greatness for granted. You just think like Zach Wheeler's great. We don't have to worry about Zach Wheeler.
Right.
It's not that he's boring. It's that's a plate you never have to spin again. Because he can come back from a life-threatening illness and pitch like a Cy Young contender.
Right. Well, and what's there to talk about? Like, he's great. Yeah. He's great. How many different ways can you say he's great? And that's why we don't talk about him as much.
Major League Baseball wants a fight between Christopher Sanchez and Jacob Mizorowski for a starting position in the All-Star game. They don't want the obvious guy who's just great and pitches great and comes out and, you know, does his job extremely well every time. That's not that, you know, that's not as dramatic and sexy and interesting. It's not headlines. You know what's headlines? Guy saying, oh, you want me now? Oh, I'm your fifth choice. Have a great break, everybody. I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised he turned it down based off of everything that he was saying before. And because I do think he cares about his legacy and I think he wants to make the Hall of Fame. And, you know, it is in Philadelphia, so it's not like he would have had to travel to go somewhere to do it. But I also, as a father with children, I understand 100% if he'd made plans to go on vacation with his family after he'd found out he's not allowed to pitch in the All-Star game, even though he wanted to. You put those plans in place, and then they come to you 2 days before you're getting ready to go on your vacation with your family. Maybe you've told your kids, hey, we're going to the beach. You can't then turn around and say, no, I'm sorry, hon. Sorry, kids. Go. You're going to go watch daddy pitch in Philadelphia. Well, don't we get to watch you pitch all the time? Yeah, but it's kind of a special game. Why is it a special? No, you're not doing that. You know, it's not worth it. It's, you know, there is nothing more infuriating. And I'm just going to speak as kind of like a dad here and a husband. And that is, there is nothing more infuriating to a family than when someone changes plans on you at the last minute. Like when you're depending on someone to do something. And then, you know, you expect them to be there at a certain time, or you expect them to do it. And then something happens, or they don't do it, or there's a miscommunication or whatever. Like, if that's what's going on with Zach Wheeler, 100%. You stick to the vacation that you said you were going to plan to do, and you go be with your family. He's done a couple All-Star games, so it's not like he's never done an All-Star game before. And I do think now that baseball writers, I do think, are evolving with these Hall of Fame votes, that they'll look more than just past, like, well, how do you have any stars? How many stars does he have next to his name on his baseball reference page? That's not really how they do it anymore. So most of them. I think we're getting there. I think we're getting to a point where those guys are starting to get weeded out a little bit. But I am surprised he turned it down. I'm very surprised he turned it down, especially after saying all the different things. And I predicted, I was like, I don't know how Major League Baseball is going to do it, but I feel a feeling they're going to get him onto the All-Star team. They tried, and Zach, I did not anticipate Zach Wheeler saying, no, thank you.
I was saying today, when they call Lizardo, Wheeler should just come out in a Lizardo jersey with like the goggles on, just not say anything, just have that happen. I would say, honestly, in regards to surprises, the most surprising part of this Phillies season was when Derek Hill made that catch and Zach Wheeler smiled on the mat.
The most incredible moment I've ever
seen that happen.
Nope. That's how I knew it was the greatest outfield play I've ever seen a defensive outfielder make for the Phillies, was because it made Zach Wheeler smile. I said that on the podcast after it happened. I've never seen Zach Wheeler smile on the field except after that catch. That was something else. So we will not get to see Zach Wheeler, but we will get to see six Phillies playing in this game. The home run, and Justin is going to be at the All-Star game, by the way, for Baseball Prospectus in Philly. So we'll get a report from him on the midweek podcast as well. All right. The home run derby is getting set for Monday night. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper will both compete in front of the home crowd. You've got also in this field, Ben Rice, first baseman for the Yankees. He's got 28 bombs on the year. It's his first home run derby. Third baseman of the Rays, Junior Caminero. He's got 27 home runs. One of the great young underrated sluggers in baseball. He finished runner-up in 2025. Cardinals outfielder Jordan Walker in the home run derby. He has 22 homers this season. It's his first appearance. Wilson Contreras of the Red Sox, who a lot of Phillies fans want to see in Philadelphia after the trade deadline. I don't think it's going to happen. But he's got 20 home runs this year, making his first derby appearance. White Sox slugger, the Japanese phenom Munetaka Murakami. He is going to be in the All-Star. He's going to be in the home run derby. And then outfielder Jack Caglione of the Royals. Caglione. Okay. The first N is silent then. Got it. Roger that. He's got 15 home runs this season and will make his first derby appearance. So
15? What is he, a baby?
I know. Little Jack Caglione of the Royals somehow found his way in. What do we think of this field? Justin, go.
I was going to say, this is a fantastic field. This is great. Like, it was funny and cool to see Alec Bohm in the home run derby when we were just like, what is this? And you know, he did his thing.
And he did well.
He lasted longer. Pete Alonso, and who was the Braves guy that year? Michael Harris, maybe.
Michael Harris.
Alec Bohm was in the home run derby, man. There were no rules.
It wasn't Michael Harris.
There were no rules.
I guess not.
But that's cool. But this is a great field. This is a bunch of guys who hit home runs, and you know, I can make jokes about Caglione all you want. It's still, yeah, he's a young hammer in his hands, and so this is a very cool field. Love Murakami, love Jordan Walker, you know, and that there's two Phillies. You know, I was kind of wondering, when's the last time that happened? But was it like 2017? The Yankees had two guys, I think. So
even
that isn't super unprecedented. So this is a very cool thing. It's happening in Philadelphia. There's two Phillies in it, but you know, everybody in this could potentially win it, I think. So this is a very cool field.
Is Schwarber the favorite, Liz? Like, who's if you had to pick one of these two Phillies to win this thing, is it going to be Harper or Schwarber?
That's a really good question.
Because Harper beat Schwarber back in 2018 in the finals in that Nationals Park.
This time, I think it might be Schwarber who takes it. He loves hitting at Citizens Bank Park. The crowd is going to be... I mean, the crowd will be on the Phillies side in general, but like... It feels like a home run derby is made for him and made for him. Like, yeah. And that he joined it sort of later at the last minute, sort of. It all lends this great competitive air to it. It's going to be so much fun. If you don't like the home run derby, I don't know what's wrong with you. I find it so much more entertaining than the All-Star game itself.
If it's a rambling commentary contest, you bet on me. If it's a home run hitting contest, you bet on Kyle Schwarber.
There you
I don't
go.
See how you think anything else.
Yeah. My money's so is it so I also think Kyle Schwarber has the better chance. Now, if you had to put your life on this and you had to bet one of the two Phillies will win it or the field, would you take one of the two Phillies to win it or the field?
Are you really asking this question?
I am.
You're asking how much we value our lives, honestly.
Yes, I do.
There's a lot riding on this.
Your life depends on this answer. That is correct.
I think one of the Phillies.
Yeah, I'll take the Phillies all day long.
Yeah, I agree. I think Harper or Schwarber will win this. And I really hope they separate them into separate brackets so that you can have a potential Schwarber-Harper rematch. Two Phillies going at it. They got to set it up that way.
It's the only reason the two of them should really be competing in this.
Right. So they can match in the finals.
Go down to it and have them be on the same team this time so the Phillies win no matter what.
And when we come back from the break and two of these spots are just skeletons in a chair with a microphone in front of them, we're willing to live with those results too.
Yes, that is correct.
Last thing on this, Major League Baseball is going back to an old format. They're getting rid of the timed home run derby. They're now going back to the swings setup. So each hitter will receive 20 swings in the first round. Semifinal and championship rounds will each feature 15 swings per batter. If a player hits a home run on his final swing of a round, they continue hitting until a swing does not result in a home run. After the first round, After the first round, the top four home run totals will advance to the semifinals, with total home run distance serving as the tiebreaker if necessary. And any ties in the semifinals or finals will be decided by a three-swing swing-off. But they went back to swings as opposed to the timed rounds here, which could make this a longer thing, and I think that's why they went to the clock initially. Like, this thing was like getting out of control long at one point. So I'm not sure the players like this version better because they get less tired.
It's better for the hitters. It's way less pressure. You know, a ticking clock. I mean, you know, that's obviously going to add pressure. Yeah. And I think that's going to make it more fun for everybody. Did Harper say? Am I remembering this? He was like, "Let's hit with a metal bat for
aluminum
like the tiebreaker or something." I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." Go nuts.
Please. Oh, my God.
Give him a Mondo bat and let him play wiffle ball. I mean, why not?
He will kill the little children in the outfield trying to catch the fly balls if he hits a metal bat at one of them. I mean, maybe they deserve it.
My life's on the line for this home run derby. Why shouldn't those children be?
You know, exactly. That's a fair point. It's a fair point. I hadn't considered that. That's a good point there. It's going to be a really fun week in Philadelphia these next couple of days with the Home Run Derby. The Home Run Derby on Netflix. We talked about this at the before we went on. If you're a Phillies fan and you don't have Netflix, like, are you buying Netflix for the Home Run Derby? I don't have Netflix. I'm torn as to what I'm going to do with this. I feel like I have to watch it. I might try and convince a family member to spring for Netflix so I can see this thing, because I am going to be back with a hit season podcast on Monday night to recap the Home Run Derby, and I got to be able to know what's going on. But Netflix, really? This is on Netflix. Can we stop it, please? So annoyed.
They really want to get into sports. Thus far, the world has said no.
No.
They're doing a great job getting exactly one Major League Baseball event from the season. This, the Home Run Derby.
Yep.
I hope you're proud of yourselves, Netflix. I hope you're proud of yourselves. All right. Yeah, I'm sure they are. Let's get to some final thoughts here to wrap up. Liz, Hit me with your final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Well, this Philly season has thus far certainly been quite the roller coaster. It's been up and down. And for those of us out there who've had a challenging 2026 so far, I've taken a lot of joy and comfort in the Phillies being so, so freaking bad. And then climbing their way back up through, you know, sheer will and talent and all that. And if you're going through a tough time, just remember the Phillies. And things could change. Things can change anytime.
If you're going through a tough time and you're a Phillies fan, you turn on the New York Mets. You'll be having a good time.
There you go. That's the button that I was looking for. Thank you. That's exactly right.
I assume that's not your final thought, Justin, but a good thought nonetheless here.
Two things.
All right.
One is during the home run derby, I'll be part of the No Bad Hops live podcast and home run derby watch party at Evil Genius in Fishtown from 6 to 8 p.m. Tomorrow, July 13th. So if you're in Philadelphia and you're not going to the home run derby, you can join us at Evil Genius. It's going to be a really good time. They're raffling off a bunch of stuff for youth baseball, including a copy of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, a cool book by a writer you've definitely heard of. The other thing I want to say is that Mookie Betts isn't going to the White House if, you know, when the Dodgers go, because he says if he goes, people get mad. And if he doesn't go, people are going to get mad. And golly gee, what a tough old time to be Mookie Betts. What a bad old period of time to be millionaire superstar athlete, two-time defending World Series champion Mookie Betts. Boy, this poor sad little
boy can't
catch a break. So I want everyone to just feel real bad for Mookie Betts tonight.
I hadn't seen that story, but yeah, we all need to pour one out.
Glad I did not.
For poor Mookie. Yeah.
Boo all Mookie right. Betts.
We'll finish on that note, folks. That'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And I want to encourage everybody to watch this show. If you're listening to this roundtable, you can watch all the roundtables on the WHYY YouTube channel, including this one. But we are going to be busy this week. Busy week ahead. We're going to have a Hittin' Season after the Home Run Derby, and I'll have a Hittin' Season after the All-Star Game. We've got a lot of coverage for you, too, on The Good Fight. I'll have a couple articles up this week on The Good Fight about the All-Star Game, as it's a big week for the Phillies and for Philadelphia. You can read all of Justin's work at Baseball Prospectus as he's covering the All-Star Game for them as well. So make sure that you're checking out everything we got going on all the socials. And tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. It's a great week for people to get started. So if they don't know about us, show them where they can find us. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.